Chapter 36. Liberation Day has begun. Right now, a parade marches down the center of Hana City, a line of musical clamor and bright colors. Holographic dancers march alongside a very real Chandrillan band. Oompas from bladder pipes, booms from the tumble drums, the clapping of hands and the stomping of marching feet. Even from where Wedge Antilles sits, up on a balcony overlooking the day's events, he hears it. He smells food, too. A dozen odors commingling in his nose, thanks to food vendors scattered throughout the city. Dermic spice and chando peppers, vent grilled blackbeaks and pickled blackbeak eggs, baked sour tarts and crispy mallow dainties. He should be down there. Not eating or watching the parade, no. He should be working. Flying sorties. Keeping an eye on things. But they told him to take it easy. He helped plan, they said, so now it was time to relax and enjoy the day. And yet he can't. He wants to stay busy. Wedge wants to do his damn job. He winces as he pulls away from the balcony. His leg and hip ache. Less today than yesterday, though. That's something. At his table, a blinking light indicates an incoming message. He hobbles over, sets it to play. Leia's face appears. It's a recorded message, not live. As she speaks, his blood goes cold. Then it goes hot.
Captain Antilles, I've gone and done something foolish. I've jumped ahead to a meeting point just outside the Kashyyyk system. I'm in the Millennium Falcon and have Yvonne Verlaine as my co-pilot. We will soon make our way into Kashyyyk orbit. If we are alone, I expect that the Empire will win the day and take me as a prisoner. A very important prisoner, and one that would represent a great loss to the New Republic. Unless, of course, someone might want to intervene. I could use some company out here, Captain. Care to join us?
And then her face shimmers and is gone. Oh, Leia, what are you doing? His heart pounds in his chest like a pulse cannon. Wedge throws on his coat and grabs his cane. Every free moment she has, Sloane gives Adia the look. The one that says, this parade, this music, this noise and clamor, it's all your fault. To her credit, Adia looks starkly chastened, as she should. Meanwhile, Sloane is strapped in for this unpleasant ride. The Empire is no stranger to celebrations. Parades are a necessity to keep the populace docile. Yes, yes, citizens, eat your sweet treats and enjoy the show. But Imperial parades are restrained affairs. They put forth processions of officers and troopers. Bands play the known marches, suitable patriotic marches. Such celebrations are short and simple. This, however, is a sloppy, egregious affair. Right now, half-dressed acrobats are passing beneath Sloane's balcony seat. They're flipping and flopping about on poles, jumping back and forth from grav bounce to grav bounce, holographic streamers trailing behind. It is clownish and bizarre. Then, thrumming by on a hovering stage, comes a martial demonstration from the Mon Cala. Admittedly impressive, given that they are essentially an underwater race of squid people. Trailing after them is yet another band, this one playing the execrable ear horror music of the Gabdorans. Sitting to her right is the Chancellor. Adia is to her left. Her guards are present by the door, though the room is home to thrice as many New Republic soldiers.
It's something, isn't it?
Mon Mothma says, and it occurs to Sloane the woman really means it. She is earnest. Many politicians put forward false faces, and that rarely settles well with Sloane. But the Chancellor's authenticity, for lack of a better word, also unsettles her.
It is something.
Let's talk for a moment. I want to lay it all on the table before the official talks begin. Before we have a scribe of record, and the messy work of figuring out the parameters of our treaty.
I will lay it all out for you, Sloane thinks. I believe your way of life is naive. I fear you will bring chaos to the galaxy. I think the only messy work here will be cleaning up the dung heap you've built by conjuring this terrible vacuum of power. We kept order. You will keep only disarray. She speaks no such truth, of course. Instead, Sloane simply says,
I would rather sit back and enjoy the show, if you don't mind.
It's a lie. It's very difficult to enjoy Gabdoran music, which sounds not unlike a chorus of animals caught in various sharp-toothed traps, struggling and failing to find freedom. But the Chancellor is persistent.
The show is part of it. The galaxy is a myriad wonderful place. It is home to such wild miscellany. Present here is individuality. Something the Empire, I feel, has missed. If there is to be any kind of treaty, it is vital we preserve what makes life in this galaxy special. It is critical we preserve all of what you will see on display. All ways of existence. All the choices for all of us.
Oh, absolutely.
Sloane lies. Every molecule of her body is straining not to taunt the Chancellor with the news that soon an attack will be incoming. And all the ships in the Empire's fleet will make short work of this world. And that the New Republic will fall to its knees. Individuality is a fine crusade if you're an idiot. Joining the collective and supporting the greater good through Imperial control, that takes true grit and real wisdom. She cannot say those things. So instead she picks a different scab.
I don't see your Alderaanian princess here.
That scores a direct hit. The Chancellor shifts uncomfortably in her seat.
Leia is ill today, I'm afraid.
A shame.
I often feel that she and I were matched by the fates, I mean, against each other. She and I dueling across the hollow waves. I would have liked to have met her in person. Yes. She is the voice and the face of the New Republic.
As I am of my empire.
Just then, the door behind them opens. A man stands there with dark hair and a rust-red Republic flight suit. He leans on his cane and then looks to Sloane. It takes their eyes meeting to realize who she's even looking at. Wedge Antilles. He's the pilot she had laid out before her in the Satrap's palace on Akiva. The way he leans on his cane, she sees now that she truly broke him. An odd worm of guilt crawls through her heart. He was just a pawn in this game. She was too, in a sense, and she regrets what happened to him. The way he looks at her, he wishes his eyes were spears, each of them piercing clean through her chest. He doesn't just want to kill her. He wants to end her. She doesn't blame him. And at least that anger tells her that she helped break his body, but not his spirit.
Good for him.
Fool though he may be for serving the Republic. The Chancellor excuses herself and hurries over to him. They speak in hushed tones, but the tension there is difficult to hide. To Adia, Sloane whispers,
The Chancellor appears rattled.
She does a little.
Something that pilot said is upsetting her.
Mothma throws her a glance, then pulls the pilot back outside the room. Adia says,
I'm sure it's nothing.
They may know something.
They couldn't.
Why?
Because they're not smart enough,
Adia says. Something about that sticks between Sloane's teeth. Not smart enough? She prides herself on being smart. The smartest in the room. but a trickle of doubt begins to creep into her mind. She has little time to ruminate upon it, though, because the Chancellor comes back into the room. Mothma is now off kilter, though she's straining not to show that to Sloane.
"Apologies,"
the Chancellor says.
"Is everything all right?" "Of course. Why wouldn't it be?"
Gallius Rax watches the events in Hana City. He has no special access. He doesn't need it. The Chancellor controls the HoloNet now, and is broadcasting her Liberation Day across the waves. It is quite the show. A demonstration from an arrogant bird.
"Look how pretty my tail feathers are."
The parade ends, and slowly they clear the Senate Plaza. A stage is elevated from the stone. It rises not with any new technology, but by men who dutifully crank old wooden handles, turning ancient stone gears. Chandrila is an old world. Modern tastes clash with a long history. If they're bringing out the stage, then soon it will be time to fill it. Which means it is also time to orchestrate the plan. He summons Grand Moff Rand to his chamber.
"Sir,"
Rand says, compliant and cold,
"prepare the fleets to move on my command."
Rax hands over a data pad.
"When I give the say-so, direct them to these coordinates."
"All of them.
Coordinate with Borum, too. We'll need everyone on the ground there with everything we have. Everything."
"But, sir, this isn't..."
"I know. Just do it."
"Does Sloane know?"
"She will. They all will, in fact. Summon them. I wish to meet with my Shadow Council."
He waves his hand.
"Now go."
In the meantime, Rax turns his attention back to the events in Hana City. It is time to watch his opera unfold.